T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
This is Sunday Skate on Sports Radio WEEI.
The first time in 39 years, the Boston Bruins have won the Stanley Cup.
Talking Bruins and the NHL.
Sure, old-time hockey.
Like it is sure.
Yeah.
With Ken Laird from the Mutt and Callahan Show.
What a bunch of criminals. We ought to be in jail. That's all there is to it.
WEEI.com Bruins writer Matt Kalman.
He's the killer.
Sunday Skate is brought to you by Wise Snacks and by Star Market, the official supermarket of the Boston Bruins.
He's just waiting. You know, we got a lot of losses.
Lace them up for some Bees Talk right now on Sports Radio WEEI.
Well, the Boston Bruins are on the brink, and there is only one person to blame. Only one. And his name is Matt Kalman, and he joins us right now for Sunday Skate. What's up, Matt?
Ken, do you only go to places where the teams have been eliminated from the playoffs?
Yes. I'm in Pittsburgh where there are no fans left. Although I'm at the fan
in Pittsburgh.
2 weeks
ago, Montreal, now Pittsburgh. Why don't you go to Toronto?
I'm gonna hit all the favorites. I'm going to go to Calgary next and then Tampa, and we'll make the whole... Every team that was upset here in round one, which is basically every team, I'll be there at some point. It is a two-hour Sunday Skate extravaganza. Not only is Matt Kalman from WEI.com in the building... Pete Blackburn is back on an Easter Sunday for 2 big hours because we're going to 10 o'clock this morning. Good morning, Pete, and welcome you back.
Good morning. Had to be here. It might be the last show of the season.
Well, it could be. We're going to get to that. They're on the brink for a reason, but I do blame Kalman. I don't know if you do, Pete.
What did I do?
Kalman totally trashed the Toronto defense for like weeks into the playoffs. I mean, how could you have been so wrong? I mean, horribly wrong.
Everybody did.
The Bruins are wrong. The Bruins didn't know the Leafs could play this well.
Come on. You have been merciless. They've been good. They've been actually good.
They've been great. They've been what the Bruins should be. Their structure, their patience, everything, you know, goes the Toronto's way at this point.
So how have you been? Why were you so wrong? I mean, I understand now why Dale doesn't promote you when he does the book junket. I mean, this
is
terrible. This is like
one of your... Because they were hustling us all.
Is that what it was?
Last month of the season, Gardner sat out and rested. Dermott sat out and rested. They were, you know, supposedly they were injured. Maybe they were just resting. And, you know, Muzzin, he was just saving it for the playoffs. It's interesting because Anderson especially would probably he's probably surprises anybody else too because he's used to being under siege here and he's having these normal games.
I mean, I don't get it, Pete. I mean, Zaitsev looks like Drew Doughty from 2014. He was supposed to be a disaster. I guess he has been at some points in the series, but for the most part, they've been good. They have been good.
Yeah, their right side hasn't been the highway that I expected it to be, or the highway that I expected the Bruins forward group to be able to turn it into. You know, I've been impressed by them overall, but I do think the Bruins have not played up to their potential, certainly in this series. And I still think that there's a potential that if they do, we could see that defense open up a little bit.
Who's the better team? I mean, through 5 games of this series, I think you would pretty much universally say Toronto's been the better team on the ice for 4 of the 5, right?
4 of the 5, yeah, and maybe even a period of the other one, who knows?
Right. So, I mean, is that a fluke? Is something happening? I mean, going into the series, it seemed like the best line in hockey, which was the phrase most commonly used for Bergeron, Pastrnak, and Marchand, even though they may or may not have been together for the entire run of it here, they were going to dominate just like they did last year. The D, you had an edge. I guess goal, probably you would have given it Freddie Anderson despite his Game 7 meltdown last year. And the forward groups beyond the top line, maybe a push. But it's not been that way at all. So is Cassidy mismanaging it, or did we really underestimate the entire Leafs roster here going in?
I think we underestimated the Leafs, and maybe overestimated the Bruins, especially in that bottom six forwards. I mean, the bottom six forward group, other than Troy Coyle, you haven't gotten anything from anyone in the Bruins side of it. And meanwhile, the Leafs' fourth line has been solid. They've been what the Bruins' fourth line was supposed to be, and their third line's been strong, even with Nylander at center. They don't seem to drop off. You know, you wonder if they're going to bring Kadri back in the second round if they make it, because they're looking pretty good without him.
Yeah, their fourth line's been really good, and I just think your biggest advantage lies in in the first line. You're supposed to have right. the best first line in hockey, or at least one of the best first lines in hockey, and they have not held an advantage
yeah.
in
this. Yeah, and to go back to what you're saying about the defense, they're kind of letting them off the hook. They're not exploiting them the way they were supposed to. You know, and Cassidy talked about game four. They got their offense. A lot of it came from that top line playing simple, getting the puck deep and forechecking. And then game five, they reverted right back to playing fancy. And then Marchand complained about the ice, that he can't make a lot of plays. But he was the whole game, he was trying to make plays. So if it doesn't add up. You just don't understand what's going through their brains.
And look around the league. Look around the league at what top first lines are doing to opponents. Right. Look at what Colorado's first line did to Calgary.
Right.
Look what Dallas's yeah. first line did yesterday to Nashville.
Sure.
If you have your first line going, if you have an elite first line and they're fully going, they can carry you in the playoffs, yeah. and the Bruins first line is not doing that.
And to look at the opposite and say, well, a lot of times first lines don't come through. And we know 2011, Krejci, Lucic, and Horton were shut down until the Horton overtime goals. You know, that Hal Gill and P.K. Subban put them under clamps, but you got enough secondary offense.
Right.
You know, the third line won them that series, right? Kelly, Peverly, and Ryder. So you go back to now, if that first line's not scoring, you know, we can put a lot of blame on them. But consider they carried this team to this point, maybe somebody else should pick it up. You know, maybe the Krejci line should show up. Maybe Jake DeBrus needs to get the gear here. Maybe Marcus Johansson needs to pay off and give us something.
And I thought the Krejci line, or at least Krejci, was good last time out. But I feel like the top six has not gotten it together at the same time.
Right.
And that's been the issue.
Well, I got four reasons why the Bruins are on the brink.
Only four?
Okay. Only four. Okay, these are the big four. And number one, they're the best line in hockey or close to it. Maybe actually they shouldn't be called that anymore because they got outplayed by Tampa last year in the postseason. And if they get outplayed here in a second straight playoffs, they're no longer the best line in hockey, nor are they kept together long enough to really be the best line in hockey. But be that as it may, Bruce Cassidy is blowing it. That is number one, yeah. okay? Cassidy might have already blown it. Game one and game five, line matching is, at worst, a disaster. At best, it's been a push. And I love this point by Pierre LeBrun. He wrote this in The Athletic, basically saying how Bergeron could not have gotten a couple of shifts against the Toronto third line in game five when you've got the final change at the Garden is just, it's just inexplicable. I mean, this is, Nazem Kadri went out. Didn't we talk about that a week ago, that was supposed to be the turning point of the series?
Sure.
So you've got Nylander centering the third line with Marlowe, who is just, he's got nothing left. And Connor Brown is not anything to fear. So if you get Bergeron and Marchand a couple of shifts against the Nylander line in Game 5, that doesn't open things up a little
yeah,
bit? Cassidy doesn't care.
He's way too focused on the defensive side. He wants to make sure, you know, Bergeron's out there against Tavares and Matthews. And you look at it, it was Charlie Coyle who was mostly head-to-head against Nylander, and it didn't go the Bruins' way. They played him even, so they're kind of letting him off the hook. You're right. I mean,
and not to mention game one, where, I mean, I think they all kind of came in, and, you know, Marchand said after the game, we thought it was going to be easier, which is a terrible quote to have from anybody.
Right.
Well, but they didn't appear to be ready to go, nor did they effort any matchups at all in that game.
Exactly.
You wrote about that after the loss, Matt.
They absolutely lost that one. And you figure, too, game two, they learned a lesson, because that's where they stopped doing this hard match, and they got the matchups in their favor more. And then game five, he goes back to doing it, and it's like he completely forgot the lessons of game one, just like the team seems to keep losing, forgetting the lessons.
And I like Cassidy as a coach, Pete. He's done some impressive things since coming in here for Julian and sparked them, you know, to a degree, you know, 2 years ago. They couldn't handle Ottawa, but I don't think anybody expected them really to handle the Senators that year. But the last 2 years have been, I mean, he got outcoached by John from Garfield, your guy, last year in the Tampa series, arguably, you know, a better roster. But he did. I mean, Braden Point outplayed Bergeron. He never got them away from a bad matchup, and he didn't do it again this year. I don't get it. Is he just too proud to get Bergeron and Marchand favorable matchups? And he just figures they're going to rise to the occasion at some point.
Yeah, I think that it might be a case of him just trusting them to get going, regardless of who they're going up against. And they haven't done it. And you know, I'll say, I said at the beginning of the series that I thought that Mike Babcock was going to get outcoached and that would be a difference for the series. And he hasn't. It hasn't even been close.
Well, it also, you know, you can't just look at the one line and say, well, you know, this is the problem. Obviously, he doesn't trust the other lines the way he has. I mean, because if you're going to play Bergeron against Nylander, that means there's going to be a shift in there for Charlie Coyle or the fourth line to play against Tavares and Matthews, and he clearly doesn't have the faith in those guys at this point, which is kind of sad considering you had 82 games to build up faith, and he doesn't have it. And he doesn't have enough faith in that bottom six to even keep them together for more than half a period in the fifth game. What a panic job that was! I couldn't believe it. It was a rotation of third and fourth lines the rest of the game, and you know that's you spend the whole season telling me, well, we need to build chemistry. We need to get Coyle and Johansson to be a pair. We need all these chemistry. And then in one half of a period of the biggest game of your season, you're mixing and matching lines the entire game. So, I mean, which is it? Do you need chemistry or do you need to just try to find a spark?
And didn't he have a quote after game five saying that they're overthinking it?
Exactly.
The players are overthinking it.
Yeah. Right.
And I think that there's a case that it might be overthinking all the way around.
Right. Well,
certainly think that the players are overthinking it, but he might be too.
That was yesterday when he said we need to frickin' play.
Yeah.
And, you know, start frickin' playing then.
Right.
Well, panic job is the right way to phrase it. Here's what Cassidy said yesterday with the frickin' line in there.
Did you sense any tension?
I didn't sense tension. I think with the way we handled some of the puck almost looked like the opposite at times. We looked almost too loose. Yet I think it probably is tension for some guys. But I'd much rather see us be on our toes, play assertive, play with urgency, and it not go our way. That's what we've done all year. Like, we've pretty much been a team that plays on their toes, and you win some, and you lose some. We won a lot more than we lost, but that's typically how we play. I'd like to see us get back to our identity in that regard. Now, some of that has been, well, Toronto stretches the zone, we've got to be, so maybe there's just too much thinking and not enough freaking playing, you know, and that's kind of what we're up against now.
Pete, you wrote in one of your latest at CBS Sports about the discrepancy between Tortorella and John Cooper in that series, where, I mean, Tortorella was breathing fire in game one and Cooper was just like milquetoast the entire series as his team was crashing to earth. I mean, Cassidy has been fire in some of the postgame sessions. I don't know what he's like with the players, but for him to say we're too loose by game five, something's wrong.
Yeah, I don't know if frickin' is the motivator that they need, but I think that, you know, there is definitely weight to what he's saying there. They were way too... They overthought it way too much in game five. There was way too many passes. Just play the damn game. And, you know, I think that they're getting frustrated, but, you know, I don't know if he's firing him up. I don't know if that's really firing him up.
You know, obviously, I don't think this series is a referendum on Bruce Cassidy and his future with the Bruins, but when you look at his postseason record now, you know, 2-4 with the Caps, that first round go around, obviously a different person, a different era, but then comes back here, they lose that series to Ottawa that, you know, again, he got out coached in that series. You think of the plays that turned that series. Of course, everyone thinks of the long pass Carlson made to, I think, Stone that or Hoffman that turned that series in the center's favor. The Bruins clearly weren't prepared for that. And now you look at these 2 years since then, and it's interesting to see how he maybe he loses his faith in himself, never mind his players in the playoffs. And, you know, you don't want to ever change who you are. And, you know, you say you're comparing Cooper to Tortorella. I mean, that's the way they were in that series. But that's the way they are during the season. Tortorella's a madman. And Cooper's a laid-back, relaxed kind of guy, a thinking man. So if you have Bruce Cassidy, a guy who does change his lines a lot during the season but not in-game this much, and now he's, you know, he's panicking and he's trying to tell the lines to play different ways, you wonder if he needs to really learn a quick lesson here, because, you know, maybe going forward you don't think he's the guy to coach this team in the playoffs.
Well, just to finish up with Cassidy and the critiques on him, I would say the other problem, and maybe this is a roster problem that he's dealing with that's less on him, but two of your advantages in the series are supposed to be Charlie McAvoy and Torrey Krug, and they have not been offensively enough. Enough. I mean, I think Bruins stats had the collective on McAvoy. Three shots in 105 minutes of five-on-five play.
It's just brutal how he never shoots the puck regular season on playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, so maybe he's not shooting. Maybe he is activating some and we're not seeing the results of it. But mostly, they're out there against the Tavares line all the time because Bergeron is.
Right, and you know what, too? I think this is the part where we don't know what we don't know. There's always rumors when Patrice Bergeron's not playing his best that maybe he's injured, because, you know, there's no other excuse for him, right? But 14 minutes of ice time in game four tells you that maybe Cassidy was reluctant to go to him a lot, even on the road, because maybe he's injured. We know Torrey Krug is not the same person right now. There might not be any injury per se that's lingering that he's going to come out and say after this series, but clearly the effects of the hit he took in game two are trickling down, just like Jake DeBrusk's. Not the same player. I mean, he looked better in game five as far as skating wise, They were making some plays, but he doesn't go to the net. He's not paying the price. There's clearly an issue there where he's tentative out on the ice and not as quick as he usually would be. And so these are the things we don't know and might never know.
Right. So Nazem Kadri had a lasting effect on the series. If he took DeBrusk out for the next
Kadri
three games.
Kadri had an effect in two ways. One, because he took Jake DeBrusk out, and two, because he's not in there causing trouble. I think the Bruins, they play their best when someone's getting under their skin. That's why they play some of their best hockey
against teams
like Montreal. You go back to Vancouver in the finals. You go back to all these things. When teams are trying to antagonize them, that's when they play their best. And even in the series, they lose a game, they win a game, lose a game, win a game, because they're responding to the losses.
Yeah, I've been surprised at the lack of fire. Oh. Not necessarily that you want to get stupid out there, but right. There has not been any fire since Kadri's left.
It's unbelievable.
A little bit from Hyman, a little bit.
And then, it all came back to David Backes, right? Game two. He's the one that set the tone in that way. Now, he hasn't done it since then, and we don't know what's exactly going on between him and Bruce Cassidy, because I can't believe he was benched for an entire third period, played two shifts in the second period. I just don't get why that's the way you coach when you don't coach that way the whole season. But who is going to do that today? I don't know if they have a player that's going to do that today, but somebody has to do it, even if it's someone like Patrice Bergeron or Torrey Krug or Charlie McAvoy. They have to go out and set a physical tone and get this team legitimately fired up.
You know what really surprised me, too? I'm sure we'll get to the non-call, the non-overturned goalie interference call at some point. But after that, especially when you're down 2-0, I'm surprised somebody for Boston didn't just run Anderson for the sake of it. I mean, if you're going to, it felt like it was a vicious Hyman ass check into Rask. But if you're upset at the refs or Toronto for not legislating, then it's time to take matters into your
own
hands.
That's always to me a sign of a team also that's not paying the price, is that they never even come close to a goalie interference.
Right.
You know, when they played Ryan Miller in 2010, everyone was saying, oh, you have to get into Miller's face, you have to get in his face. And I'll never forget Vladimir Sobotka took a goalie interference penalty because he charged the net. And obviously you're not trying to hurt the guy, but you're at least showing that you're there and you're going to be a presence. And I swear the series turned on that play, because suddenly the Bruins said, wow, we can get into the crease against this guy. We can get in his face. And that's, we haven't seen any of that, whether it's Anderson or anyone on the Leafs. We haven't seen any pushback from the Bruins.
And I think that Freddie Anderson is certainly a guy that you can rattle.
Oh, for sure.
If you get in his grill and you get in his head and plant a seed, you can rattle him.
Absolutely. I mean, he was rattled the whole season. Look how he played down the stretch. I mean, we talked about it nonstop, the way he played down the stretch, losing those games to Ottawa, getting up 5 and 6 goals, getting pulled. And now you're turning him into Ken Dryden here.
Which leads to Laird's reason number two, the Bruins are losing.
Oh, we're only on 2 out of 4?
Yes. Because Cassidy blowing it is number one, far and away. The line matching has been terrible. I would also add in there, before I move on, number two, the power play creativity has been a little suspect.
God,
it's non-existent.
But they were good. I mean, they were good through the first four games of the series and single-handedly won a game in Toronto, so it's hard to crush them totally. But the 0-for-3 in Game 5 was obviously bad. I don't know if that's Cassidy's job. Who handles the power play among the coaching staff?
Yeah, I think he has a big hand in it for sure.
Okay, so I'll throw that into the kettle as well. But number two, and you wrote this in your piece, whether it was yesterday or the day before, Matt, Marcus Deadwood Johansson, yet another terrible trade deadline acquisition. I mean, they were in on everybody, and this is who they ended up with. They needed somebody to get in Frederik Andersen's face, and this is the last guy to do so. I mean, he is 30 feet from the net at all times.
It's kind of crazy. A guy I think is known for maybe going to the net more, but again, he's a guy who seems tentative since he was injured. And it's kind of scary to watch guys play that way. I mean, it's the playoffs, so you were injured a month ago. It's time to get going here. And I said at the time I wasn't going to 100% kill them for the trade, because I thought, Wayne Simmonds clearly didn't work out in Nashville, and he wouldn't have worked out here. You probably saved yourself there. It was going to be a steeper price. The guy, obviously, that they should have gotten based on how he's playing now and just based on the type of player he is, would have been Zuccarello. If you could,
Stone.
Well, Stone is a different category. Right. I put him in a different category. I said if you weren't going to get Stone, the rest of these guys, Nyquist, Zuccarello, Johansson, Simmonds, they were all kind of the same to me.
Right.
They were going to play third line, maybe second line roles. But clearly this guy is not right. And like you said, it's another terrible acquisition at the deadline. Again, they weren't all in, and it's kind of frustrating, because you can go back to the Muzzin thing if you want to. That's the difference right there. People telling me, you can't score, so how are you going to put it on a defenseman? But we know that the scoring comes from defense, strong defense in your own end, and we're not getting that from Torrey Krug and Matt Grizzlick on that left side.
Well, Muzzin has been very good. I mean, you were right about that months ago. I'll give you credit, and he has been a difference maker. He's physical. He's also sharp defensively. He's just a good all-around player. He had the signature assist there on the goal, the controversial goal on the setup to Matthews. He's just good. I mean, he's a cup winner for a reason. And right now, I mean, maybe it's more important to get Bergeron away from him than it is from Tavares.
Well, they've done it a little bit. That was the whole thing with Pastrnak in Game 4, getting him on different lines to get him away from Muzzin.
Yep.
And then they just played right into their trap again in Game 5.
And you can't overlook his impact on possibly taking Torey Krug out of the series physically.
Right. True. So. Yeah. Now, the other guys, I mean, you cover the league as well as anybody does, Pete. I mean, Duchesne and Dzingel were still alive. That was just an unbelievable performance by Columbus in Round 1. Duchesne showed up. I don't know if Dzingel did. Would he have been a better fit than Johansson? I mean, looking back on it, either of those two guys now look like prize possessions.
Yeah, I don't know if I think Dzingel may have been a fit that I was looking at around then, but you know, he didn't have a super measurable impact in the Columbus series, I don't think. And Duchesne's the guy, but I don't think that Duchesne would have been a massive fit with the Bruins. And
but
the
price
would have been
huge. You feel bad for
Krejci,
though, like anybody. I mean, it's 2019. They're still rotating wingers every period for the guy.
It's a clown show. They didn't bulk up the left side. They didn't bulk up the right side. We were talking about this last July. They went out and got John Moore. They signed bottom six forwards. They lost out on Kovalchuk, lost out on Tavares, and didn't have a plan B.
I wasn't inspired by Johansson, but I thought that it was something. And that they added depth, and I liked that, but he has not done anything. He's, you know, he's a playmaker guy at his best. You know, he's a nice playmaker, but he's not going to be a game breaker. And I think that they needed somebody who had a little bit more finish to their game than Johansson.
And you know what, too? Now I'm thinking about this. It's like you're jumbling your lines like a madman in Game 5. If you're not going to play four lines and you're barely playing three lines, you know, Charlie Coyle is your best forward in the series. Why not pop him on that Krejci line on the right side? I don't think he had more than one shift there. If you're going to stack up, just put all your six best players on the top two lines and try to grind something out here. You know, I'm looking at this now. You're talking about Muzzin. He played 11 minutes 5-on-5 against Pastrnak in Game 5 where you control the matchups.
That's what I'm saying.
So what are you doing?
I don't think he's doing anything. He's just he's trying to roll. I mean, you could almost understand it in Game 1. He's just going to try to roll his lines because he feels confident in them. But now you're actually benching the fourth line because they're getting outplayed. So what are you doing? You're rolling three lines, but you're mixing. I mean, it's just... It clown show is a way to look at it.
And it certainly, you know, resonates with the players. I mean, here it is. If you're jumbling like that, you know, they all talk about we play with each other, but it's not just about like having chemistry on the ice. It's just about not even knowing when you're going on the ice.
Yeah. All this being said, Toronto is Toronto, and they haven't won a playoff series in 15 years, so I'm not sure it's over. If this were a normal team,
I don't think it's over at all.
It's not over.
Like I said, I don't think the Bruins have... I think, well, it's pretty obvious, but I don't think the Bruins have played to their best, to their potential in this series yet. Yeah. And if they do it in a single game, if they do it today, the series is not only not over, I think it's over because the Bruins are going to win in Game 7.
Well, I just don't know. I feel less confident this year than I would in past years just based on the fact that it's been so many games that they've played poorly. Slumps happen, and it goes one or two games. We know we even saw it in 2011. They had their bad stretches, falling behind in 2-0 in a couple of series. But this is like extended. You don't expect a slump to last more than a game or two. And the games they win, they're not playing their best. The game they won, they didn't play their best in Toronto. So that's the scary part to me. I just don't know, and this is what I wrote today, I don't know if they have the energy because I think Game 2 took way too much out of them, both the fact that DeBrusque and Krug got banged up, and I just think everyone expended so much energy in that series to play that way. The talk after the game was, how do you duplicate this effort? Well, they haven't come close, and maybe you can't match that effort, but at least come close, and it's not even in the ballpark.
Well, coming up, we'll talk about the Bruins' line changes for today, and I've got my hot lava takes 3 and 4 as to why the Bruins are losing the series. Can't wait for that, I know.
Get your popcorn.
Yes. Matt Cowan and Pete Blackburn are here for 2 big hours. We are pushing Bradfoe, Wiggins, and Reamer to the side. We're here until 10 a.m. this morning. Happy frickin' Easter. It's Sunday Skate, presented by Wise Snacks and Star Market. Let's get a trending update.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
You're listening to Sunday Skate with Ken Laird from the Mutt and Callahan Show and WEEI.com Bruins writer Matt Kalman. Sunday Skate is brought to you by Wise Snacks and by Star Market, the official supermarket of the Boston Bruins.
We've been defending for a good amount in this series. We gotta throw these punches. We gotta get in their end and we gotta get pressure. We gotta forecheck. We gotta be resilient, you know, because they've been doing it all series to us. They're dumping it in. They're getting it back. They're going low to high. You know, we know their game plan.
The other thing, though, is just going through and being as steady as you possibly can and understand what's going on. But we know the formula for us to win tomorrow. We know that. Now we got to do it. It's great to know we have the answers, but now you got to do it every day. And that's the hardest part. And sometimes at home you get a little carried away. Let's just play.
Well, Mike Babcock there, they know the formula, the Bruins know the recipe, whatever it is, these teams know each other pretty well, that's pretty obvious. Sunday Skate presented by Wise Snacks and Star Market, Ken Laird, Matt Kalman, Pete Blackburn from CBS Sports, and Game 5, you know the troubling thing, guys, yes, it was sloppy ice, whatever you want to say, that was a Bruins style of game, right? That's a game they're supposed to win, and they obviously didn't for a couple of reasons. Goalie interference has got to be factored in there in some form or fashion, but yeah. Do you think Cassidy was really unhappy with the style of the, of game and the way that was played when all things were
Were equal? That was the Bruins style for sure, except that they didn't, when they had a chance to take some chances and take some off, you know, take some offensive risks and do something, to do some things, you know, offensively. He even said it. He looked back at the film and said we passed up way too many shots and looked to make the next play. And when every one of us saw it in real time, I'm glad the coach saw it on replay.
Yeah.
And now we all agree. Now stop doing it.
Yeah, I feel like that's been a theme in the series too. It wasn't just Game 5.
Right.
They've passed up way too many shots in this series.
Brad Marchand thinks he gets points for prettiness. There's no doubt he thinks this is like a dunk contest. There's going to be judges in the stands, you know, grading his moves. Get the puck deep and grind these guys down. I mean, Jake Gardner, we know, he's playing with a bad back. And early in the series, they did take some hits at him. I know back is, you know, ran him a couple times. When's the last time he was touched?
Right. I mean, Gardner and Dermott, that's supposed to be the defensive pairing you're abusing in the series, and it's not happening.
Oh, and you brought up Zaitsev, too. I mean, go at his side, attack him. When's he been hit?
Who was it in the third period that there was just absolutely no excuse? Was it McAvoy? There was absolutely no excuse when there was a point where he had an open shot on net, tried to pass it across the slot. It was McAvoy.
Yeah.
And
probably.
It was. And it made no sense. It was infuriating. At that point, if you're not shooting the puck, you're down by one, you're not shooting the puck with a wide open look on net, what are you even doing out there?
It's unbelievable. That, you know, and a lot of that comes back to, you know, there's no excuses in this league because everyone has youth. But again, he's only in his second year. He's barely played 100 games in the NHL. He's still getting his footing. I'll tell you the comments that we just played and some of the other stuff that he said yesterday gave me hope for him as a leader in the future. He actually came out with some emotion and said some things about how we have to be better and get in gear. And it's good to see that someone's doing that. A lot of the leaders on this team are kind of, you know, downplaying things. And it's always about, you know, oh, we'll be fine, we'll be fine. It's good to see that he's, you know, not panicking, but at least a little bit of excitability there. And maybe that'll carry over to his game. Maybe that's the way he gets his game motivated. And maybe he will come out and have three or four shots on net tonight. It would be a record, I think, for him.
Well, we want your expectations today. What do you expect at 3 o'clock in Game 6 here with Bruins and Leafs? Bruins on the brink. 617-779-7937. And if they do lose, who is to blame? I've got Cassidy top of the list with Johansson secondary. I know Maria's on the line. She wants to get to the goalie interference. I will throw that in as my fourth. I'm going to skip over my third reason for now. But I will say they got hosed by Toronto in the situation room in Game 5.
They got
that's
got
to be factored in.
They got hosed, but this is what I felt at the time. I didn't get too riled up about it. It's just, did they deserve to get that call?
Yeah. I would think it was certainly a bad call.
Right.
It was. I've seen that called for less. And, you know, I think that was goalie interference, and I think there's not a lot of argument against it. But I also found it difficult to get fired up about it because they didn't do anything else.
Right. The only thing that fired me up about it is the next day, you know, having some time to go through my Twitter timeline and see every, not only ex-goalie, but current goalies. Cam Talbot still plays in the National Hockey League, takes to Twitter to criticize the call. You don't see that in the NHL. You see NBA and MLB.
Same,
you don't see guys.
Same night.
Right.
Probably a less egregious interference was called and overruled.
Well,
the
that,
goal
goes,
in the
that goes back
game.
To the way they're leaving it to the officiating crews. Every officiating crew has a different margin for error. And, you know, I think you're going to play the clip of Brian Burke. You know, Ron McClain asked him a great question. It was, why do we have to defer to the guy on the ice? If the guy on the ice has to go to the video, he obviously doesn't know.
Right.
Yeah.
So he made a call just based on what he thought, a guess. You look at the video review, and then if there's not great evidence to disprove him, his call stands. But he's the one who saw it the least.
Right.
So go with what's on the video. Go with the people who can see it.
Right. So stupid. Here's Brian Burke on Sportsnet the other night.
So let's get to the non-goalie interference call on Tuukka Rask.
Well, I watched this play happen, and again, I got no dog in this fight. I don't care which team wins this game. Zach Hyman initiates the contact with McAvoy, I believe it is, and then backs right into the goaltender. It's a bang-bang play. There's no question in my mind that's goalie interference. And as the delay went on, I said this works in the Leafs' favor. The longer the debate goes on, the more likely it is they're going to rule it's a good goal and not goalie interference. To me, it should have been a quick review and a non-goal. Fortunately for all involved, Toronto scored again right after that, so it's not as meaningful. It ended up being an important goal in the game when Boston scored late.
Yeah, but which is just, that's kind of dumb to say, too.
We,
I mean, the whole game changes from there in the way you play.
And we should say, too, that Brian Burke worked in the NHL front office, and I don't want to say he's an apologist for the front office of the league, but he's definitely a sympathizer. He'll tend to lean on the league side of things because he knows how hard a job it is. He always defends officials and how difficult their job is. For him to say something like that is really telling.
But you're right, though, Matt. It's like if the league had come out and said, okay, Rask is somewhat out of the blue paint and it's questionable, but for them to say the call on the ice stands,
right,
that is the worst possible.
Well, I say that with all the replay rules in all the leagues. Why does the call on the field stand? You did a replay review. The replay review should rule over. That's why it exists.
Yeah, and the league's quote-unquote explanation that they released after the fact was nothing sort of an explanation. It was just, well, we made the call on the ice, and that's what it is.
It's all because of the egos of the officials, because after Brian Burke said that, you know, that's when Ron McClain pressed him on why doesn't the call on the replay have precedent, and he talked about, you know, we want to empower our officials to make calls, and it's a hard job, because they don't want to be embarrassed. Everything that happens with replay that goes wrong is because we have to defend the officials' egos and not hurt their feelings. And meanwhile, you know, multi-million dollar games are turning on the idiocy of these officials and their inability to do their jobs, but we have to, you know, brush their egos.
Well, I mean, Brian Boucher and Mike Milbury, that was the broadcast I was watching here, and they were both, Milbury said it's an easy call, and I'll bet most people would say he's a Bruins homer, so they would take, you know, but...
Yeah.
But I mean, it was like they were stunned that it didn't come back.
I don't even want to know what Jack was doing on the other side. Oh my God, is he alive? Did he put himself back together after that?
I mean, Brickley he sounded sour grapes from the clips I heard. Which you know, they have a right to be pissed. But
absolutely,
to Pete's point, they were sort of outplayed. It goes back to last year too. They got hosed on the trip call in McAvoy. But you couldn't complain about it much because you got totally embarrassed in the series.
And then you had too many men on the ice call on your own team. So maybe that kind of cancels out, because how do you have a too many men on the ice penalty in a crucial playoff game when you're the Boston Bruins? That's the one thing you should never do.
Well, also, I think you can argue, too, that the Bruins' actual goal in that game shouldn't have counted, because I think that play was offside.
Oh, see, I thought it was fine, because you know what? I think I actually have a better view from my seat than any of the videos you saw. And when I was watching it in real time, it was an unorthodox break-in, and it caught my eye. And I did see the puck across the line, and I felt that it did go in before those guys, because it was just an awkward way that Pastrnak stopped with the puck. And I did see some white paint between the puck and the line. So I thought it was onside. But yeah, obviously, from the reviews, if they're going to go based on the video, the videos I saw that you saw, it did make it look more offside than it looked in real time from 100 feet, you know, however many 100 stories in the air, wherever we are.
All right, well, to the phone lines we go. I know our next two callers will have some takes on this. Maria in Watertown is up next on Sunday Skate. Good morning, Maria.
Hi, good morning, guys. Happy Easter to all of you. You know, at the time, I wasn't riled up about the goalie interference call because, honestly, you know, the Bruins were gift-wrapped three power plays that they did nothing with.
Exactly.
However, okay, what is the purpose of a situation room if you're not going to remedy a situation.
Room in Toronto, no less.
And by the way, in Toronto, when you look at the play that happened in the Colorado-Calgary game, which was virtually identical, and you don't make that call, this is why the league is a bunch of buffoons between Department of Player Safety and these types of reviews, which are inconsistent at best, and that's a nice word I'm using on Easter Sunday. It's laughable. It's laughable. And I agree with all of these players, current and former players who are goalies. Get players in those rooms. And you know what? Screw the feelings of the referees.
Exactly.
If you got the call wrong, sir, okay, you need to learn a lesson, and you need to learn how to make that call right. If not, take a seat and let someone else put on the striped jersey, because this is the NHL playoff. There is no room for Mickey Mouse stuff like that, okay? That's number one. Number two, I do agree with you gentlemen regarding Bruce Cassidy. He looks like a fish out of water. He looks like he can't coach his way through this series, and he's getting beat but at every decision by Mike Babcock. I don't understand what the hesitancy was in the game Friday night. It's almost as if the Bruins are afraid to take a risk on offense, which is the polar opposite of what a Bruce Cassidy team has been up until now. So that's got to change. If not, you know, they might as well pack their bags today. Do I expect that same kind of effort today? No, I don't, because this team's MO all season long has been to give us those bounce back games. But I will tell you this, if, and that's a big if they are done today, in my view, this is all on Don Sweeney, because once again, this GM did nothing at the trade deadline to solidify this team for a playoff run. We dealt with this last season, and we're dealing with it again this season. Okay, you didn't do enough to get a real winger to play with Krejci. Okay, so this is on you, Donnie. This is what the narrative. This is going to be Maria Stanici's narrative on Donnie Sweeney. You screwed it up again, Donnie.
Thanks, Maria.
Thanks for the time, guys.
Thank you. And, you know, Coyle's been, I think most people would say Coyle's a success. They would give Sweeney credit for that.
Right.
One of their best forwards.
Plus, he's not a rental. You have him back next year. That's a great guy to have built your third line around next year.
But you can't count on him to really score goals. Although, you know what? In this series, he should be out playing Nylander if that's the matchup.
Exactly.
They're going to need some goals from that line.
Yeah. And, you know, the bugaboo always with him is he's a passer first. And we've seen a lot of that. He's shot a little more late in the season and early in this series, but he's clearly got to assert himself more. You know, sometimes you have to. They always talk about go out of your comfort zone in the playoffs. And do you think anyone on this team is going out of their comfort zone? Maybe Pastrnak early in the series when he was throwing some hits, but everyone's just playing their role. They're not doing more than they're usually expected to do, and that's where it comes down to.
I really think they're sort of scarred from game one. That risk, the fear of risk on offense that Maria's talking about.
Yeah.
They guys give up so many odd man rushes in game one. That Nylander breakaway, and
that wasn't even due to risk though. That was just due to sloppy play. They
True.
Were just a mess in game one.
True.
So I don't know if that's the case, then that's on the Bruins players, because that's a complete misevaluation of what happened in game one.
But the Leafs are good with a stretch pass. I mean, that is their, you know.
Yeah, I'm not saying the Bruins should open up play and you know,
be pinching at every turn. Yeah.
Right, because you're going to get burned more times than not, because this team is way faster than you, and you know, they have elite skill players. But you know, if you're looking at game one and you're saying, well, we can't be as aggressive because look what happened. Well, that's not what happened in game one.
And maybe if you do, you give up one or two. Maybe your goalie makes a save. I mean, it's like, are we that fearful that Tuukka can't make a big save on the breakaway to not be that risk averse too? I mean, usually you play that way when you don't trust your goalie or you don't have a good goalie. I mean, you have to trust everyone in every way, you know, and just let him do his job. And do your job out there. Don't try to, you know, worry about these breakdowns that are gonna bite you.
And listen, it's almost been 45 minutes. We haven't mentioned the fact that Tuukka was really good in game five. So I'm going to throw that out there.
I'm not allowed to talk about Tuukka. Everyone tells me stop talking about it. It's, oh, my God.
Well, he deserves his own segment, as does Fred in New Hampshire. So okay, that'll be coming up. Cassidy's line changes we will get to. And I've got the numbers, the all-time historic numbers when the Bruins trail 3-2 in game six. So we'll have those for you. It's Sunday Skate, presented by Wise Snacks and Star Market with Matt Kalman and Pete Blackburn. I'm Ken Laird. This is Sports Radio WEI.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run Finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
You're listening to Sunday Skate with Ken Laird from the Mutt and Callahan Show and WEEI.com Bruins writer Matt Kalman. Sunday Skate is brought to you by Wise Snacks and by Star Market, the official supermarket of the Boston Bruins.
What's Cassidy doing with that first line? I think he dropped the ball in game one. I mean, you got home ice last shift, and you still bang your head against the wall by putting Bergeron's line. You had the choice. You kept putting it out there against Tavares and Marner. It made no sense. So what you do in game two? You moved it around a little bit.
When you look at the lines, I think you got to keep the lines as is. I don't think you could start moving guys in and out of lines and switching up. You think you could move Pastor out of that line and then who are you going to put there?
Heinen goes up.
You got to figure something out. I mean,
give me a solution.
Listen, you got to maybe light a fire on those ass. I don't know. I'm just not a fan of moving guys around.
Wiggy speaks the truth. Wiggy hockey expert Lou and Wiggy. Earlier this week at Sunday Skate, presented by Wise Snacks and Star Market.
They are the two most hockey knowledgeable guys that work on the weekdays, right?
So I would say so after Dale's Bruins Cup prediction.
Exactly. So there you go. But
right down the toilet. Yeah, I mean,
Wiggy was clearly long on that one. We know that Bruce Cassidy does not shy away from ever changing lines and did all season. But his defense, maybe he didn't start watching this season until the playoffs. Most people don't. So you got to give him credit at least for watching now. And I think the most telling part of that clip is that Glenn Ordway doesn't have an opinion there. He's like directing traffic. I never heard Glenn not have an opinion.
That has never happened. Glenn will be on fire tomorrow with OMF, 2 o'clock. Now, the line changes for today, 3 p.m. We expect, based on line rushes yesterday, Matt, you were there, Backes and Achari are out. The great
Seems
rookie Carson Kuhlman and Joachim Nordstrom are in.
Yeah, I mean, I would just say that on whatever day before game four they practiced, it also looked like Backes was going to be out that day, and then he was in the next day.
Oh, okay.
So I'm not going to 100% commit to the Backes being out part, but Kuhlman being in, I would say, is going to be in. When Bruce Cassidy says we're considering it, I think you'll probably see Kuhlman go in for either Backes or Chari.
But not on the Krejci line, right?
No, he's not, right, on the third. I think they're trying to push Johansson on that second line now.
And I think that Backes is going to be out today, just based on how much they played him last time.
Well, that's just it. I mean, what is going on here? Is he lost all faith in the guy? Is he banged up more than we know? It's kind of pathetic because it's kind of sad to see. I don't like to bring up the $6 million, but the $6 million guy
can't
get
his
shift right.
But I also think that it shows how dire the situation is that we're complaining that David Backes might not be in the lineup.
Is he playing? Right, exactly. He spent the whole year saying, why is he playing? And now, why isn't he playing? But by the same token, I mean, part of that $6 million he earns by being a leader, by being the vocal guy on the bench, by being the guy who comes out and looks for the time to make the game-changing play. And he did that in game two. He's had a tough time doing that since then, but he's been effective. He's had some scoring chances when they've played him with Coyle. They've created some things. I don't know if maybe just the intensity of the series and the every other day nature of it is getting to him. And that's what we thought all along, that maybe he wouldn't be able to play consecutive games. So maybe they're thinking, sit him today, and if there's a game seven, we can get him back in there. But it's kind of, it tells something about the depth of their organization that they're always bragging about, that at this point in the year, we're hoping that Carson Kuhlman is the prospect, the guy who a year ago was winning the national championship. He's the prospect we're hoping will go in there and step in, not Solarik, JFK, Frederick, Sinishin, blah, 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 blah. We have a lot of prospects, but none of them were NHL ready this year when we thought they were.
But Kuhlman was working, I thought. I mean, he was in for the first three games.
Yeah, but you know what? He works, but he's not. He's not a
finisher.
His ceiling's not very high.
That's just it. He's not a finisher, and he's not a guy to play on that second line. So I think this would be a perfect spot for him to go in and play with Coyle. And again, they don't need scoring from that line. Go out there and have a 40-second shift where the Leafs are winded. Have a shift where you grind out a team and maybe pin them in, and then you get to make a change in the middle of your shift, and maybe Bergeron gets out there against a tired line, because that's what the Leafs are doing to you. You know how many times in Game 5 they were hemmed in and they were making a change, and next thing you know, you did have a lesser line out there against Matthews or Tavares. You know, it doesn't show up in the final time at ice because it's only seconds here or there, but those seconds make a huge difference in the whole attitude of the game.
Moore's in there for Grizzlick's been so bad. I don't That's another problem Cassidy has.
Well, he's had his moments. Moore has been, I mean, your guy Moore.
I know.
Has been the issue. He's not very good. And
no,
I don't.
No, that whole pairing is a mess.
I don't write Moore off for the rest of this contract. I think if he stays healthy and he gets going, he's a decent player. Because just based on his skating alone, he can be a third pair defenseman in this league and hold his own. But in this series, whether it's just coming back from injury, whether he was not 100% ready to come back, or he's just getting not able to keep up with the pace of it, but he looks terrible out there.
Yeah. Well, the problem is, I mean, Toronto is winning these like third pairing and fourth line matchups significantly.
Right.
They're, not only was their D supposed to be a weakness, I'd never heard of Freddie Gauthier and Trevor
right.
Moore and Tyler and, Ennis, for God's sake, is blowing past people.
And that
so.
Was, first of all, Ennis wasn't supposed to play until Kadri got hurt, and he's killing you. And, it was up in the air for the Leafs who they were going to play in their fourth line, whether it was going to be Gauthier or Pettan or what the combination was going to be, and they found the magic group there.
Yeah. All right, 617-779-7937. We're going to have Freddie hold on because he has too many things to say. And we're up against the break here. But here are the stats now, quick. The Bruins all-time in Game 6 is when they trail 3-2.
Yeah.
Are 10-13
okay.
in Game 6.
Right.
So that's not bad.
Right.
But all-time in the series, they're 3-20.
Oh, wow.
When falling behind yep. 3-2.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you want to just narrow it down to more modern times... 2-2 in Game 6 when facing elimination since 11. And then 2008, they won a Game 6 when they were facing elimination. And in 2010, they lost the one to the Flyers. So it's 3-3 since, if you want to stay the Claude Julien, Bruce Cassidy era, this core of the team, the Chara, Bergeron, Krejci
right.
core. So,
Well, you were there in 2012. They yep. had to win a game in Washington.
Yeah, Tyler
game
Seguin
six.
Scores in overtime.
Right.
And that series is maybe the one that most mirrors this one just because the Bruins got stuck playing in the Capitals style. The Capitals, it was the Dell Hunter, Ovechkin plays 10 minutes a game and we're just going to win games 1-0. It was Holtby's coming out party. And the Bruins really got bogged down in that series by the Capitals just packing it in front of the net. I think they blocked 1,000 shots in that series.
Yeah.
And Seguin got the bounce, got the overtime winner, and then they lost in overtime in Game 7. And That's the most similar to this series, I think, just the fact that you're getting outplayed and not dictating the play in the series.
And of course, in the Cup win, they were down 3-2, but that was a little different because they won Game 6 here.
Yeah.
And then went to Vancouver to win Game 7, so that was, it's flipped a bit. But yeah, regardless...
The Carolina series in 2009 was also a big Game 6 road win. They forced it back here, so it's been done. They know how to do it.
While that history is not great, Toronto is Toronto, right, Pete? So they haven't won a playoff series in over 5,000 days.
Who's counting?
Right, and I think honestly that the being in Toronto today helps the Bruins.
Yes,
because
I agree.
Because
yeah.
you have to go out. You know that it's going to be tough on the road. It forces you to even take it up a notch. And if you win today, you're coming back home for a Game 7 right. with momentum, with a seed of doubt in Toronto's mind. I think that benefits the Bruins.
Hockey cliche man would say, go out there and play a good road game.
Right.
Get pucks deep, yeah. forecheck, go
right.
to the net.
It feels like a David Backes game, but instead it's a Carson Kuhlman game. And who can blame Bruce Cassidy there? Well, we are. Who do you blame for this 3-2 deficit? If they lose, who's to blame, and what do you expect today? 617-779-7937. Hour 2, bonus hour, into the 9 o'clock hour. Suck it, Bradfoe. Suck it, Wiggins. Suck it, Reamer. Sunday Skate continues at Game 6 Easter Sunday on Sports Radio WEI.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.